You're listening to Waveform, a show about music, discovery, and the technology that ties it all together in new and powerful ways. This program is brought to you by Wavelake, the easiest way to distribute and stream music using Bitcoin. Listen today at wavelake.com.
Hello, welcome back to another edition of Waveform. I'm here with Sam. How's it going, Sam?
Hey, dude. It's going very well. I'm excited about our... It's been a minute since we've done any, you know, talk to some other people on this thing. Thank God we got some other voices because we were starting to bore our audience, I think. A little bit.
Yes.
We got Shy Kids on.
We got Shy Kids on today. We had a great conversation with them, so... we're psyched to get to that in a little bit. Before we do, we just wanted to mention a couple things. The Bitcoin record competition is still going on. The entries have been closed now, but we are going to be counting sats on all the tracks for the rest of April. So if you've got a song that you've been following on that competition that you want to see on the record, go send them some sats.
Yeah, just a reminder, the top 21 tracks at the end of April will make it through to the next round, and then some judges are going to, I guess, vote on who ends up on the record. So, yeah, if there's something you really want to see on that record, you better boost away.
Yeah. Next thing, we just released a new feature on Wavelake for artists, podcasters.
That.
Yeah, we're excited about this. Artists and podcasters can now register a Lightning address, any Lightning address. And as long as it's valid, we can forward all your earnings to that Lightning address. This is happening at the same time as we're starting a wallet registration process. So we're using a new Lightning service provider for our back end. And we're going to have to verify users in specific regions. And since we can't support every single region in the world yet, we're offering this other option for artists to continue to be able to use Wavelake and earn for their music.
Yeah, so very simply, just go log into Studio. You'll get a prompt. If you're an artist in Wavelake, you'll get a prompt to either just convert this wallet over to the new thing. If you don't want to do that, you have the option to add a Lightning address. Or if you're not in a supported region, just add a Lightning address and then everything will just continue to function as normal.
The Lightning address options.
People seem to be.
Yeah, I was going to say the Lightning address options pretty nice. I did it too. sends you sats whenever you earn them, which is really
just
nice.
Going straight to my node. So I'm pretty pumped on that. And other people
super
are too.
Cool. There's a bunch of stuff on our zine about this too. So if you want details, like we've tried to answer any possible questions. If you have others, you know, obviously.
Yeah, there's a zine post and then there's a deeper, not too much technical, but more of like a frequently asked questions style thing as well. That's linked in that zine post. So go check that out. And speaking of the zine, Josh actually wrote a good zine post on Nostra Wallet Connect, which ties into this as well. So like if you are using a Lightning address, you know, out of a Wavelake, I can't talk right now. You know what I'm saying. If you're not using Wavelake wallet, if you're using Lightning address, Nostra Wallet Connect is really great to just make those zaps work very well as a listener of other Wavelake artists. So if you're not familiar with that, go check out Josh's post on the zine as well. It has a cool name. Frictionless Zaps, I think, which I thought was a cool band name. That's what he named his post. But it'd be like, you know, Josh and the Frictionless Zaps. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it super easy for you to use the Wavelake mobile app with any NWC compatible wallet. That includes the Wavelake wallet. That includes, I mean, Albi also has NWC. I think Mutiny has it, NWC. So
And
it just adds a nice, convenient connector to your wallet to be able to zap.
And in that post, we said Strike does because it was listed on the NWC.dev site. But apparently they don't yet, but they're working on it, which will be really cool for a lot of users.
I'm sure the adoption will be become bigger as we go. So that's really cool. Do we want to hit up the mailbag quick before going to Shy Kids?
Let's hit up the mailbag. Here's our good old mailbag theme song, courtesy of Tone Wrecker.
Give it a boost. Give it a boost. Have you got any messages?
You've got boost.
I've heard of audience participation shows, but this is ridiculous.
Love that. I'll never get tired of that. So what do we got in the mail?
Yeah, so a couple messages, and then actually Tone Wrecker. I'll start out with a couple haikus that Tone Wrecker sent in. I'm gonna get into a poetic voice now. 575, boost, fill up these messages here. Will you try haiku? Pouring out some sats, bamboozled by bad artwork. Disc go round, sell back.
You're putting off strong So I Married an Axe Murderer vibes, which we've joked around about that movie quite a few times, but
woman
really, really whoa, psycho, man.
Psychopathic boost, manifesting new systems, learning by doing. Those are
good
all
stuff.
From Tone Wrecker.
Good yeah. stuff.
All right, and then some just regular messages. This came from an anonymous user, but they wrote in that I'm at about 10% wave lake for my daily listening now.
I'll take
if you're
that's
collecting
good.
Stats. Yeah, that's not bad.
We are collecting stats. Like let's hear some yeah. more.
We've got a couple data points now. And then Joe Martin wrote in, I think, regarding our conversation about Bob Dylan. My dad is obsessed with Bob Dylan, too.
Joe, when I see you in person next, we can cry on each other's shoulders about the trauma that Bob Dylan has brought us with our fathers. It'll be fun.
Your fathers did you a favor, guys. That's yeah. how I see it, and that's how I'm approaching raising my children with a Bob Dylan soundtrack. No, when I put it on in the car, oh,
who,
man. Yeah.
Who are you forcing your children to listen to, out of curiosity? What's your number one most played? What's the one where the kids are in the back and they're just like, no?
I mean, Dylan is up there sure. Because I've played him a lot. Oh, what else would it be? They're pretty open-minded when it comes
Super
to
Tramp.
Music.
Cheap Trick, a little Chicago blood in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't think of anything that really like sort of that they bristle at aside from Bob Dylan. I mean, I get into the habit of listening to albums like on repeat once I really like them. So that happens sometimes where they're like, again,
right.
this one again. Right. What about you? What's your, what is the
it's
thing
gotta,
you get complained at?
It's got to be the Beatles. Although my kid likes the Beatles, so. Well, she's starting to like the Beatles again. I think she went through a phase where she was trying to act like she was too cool for the Beatles, but let's get real.
Doesn't everyone go through that?
Yeah, at a certain point.
I think so. I think everyone kind of has that moment where they're like, you know what? I'm good with the Beatles for now.
I was so, you know this about me, I was so obsessed with this Doja Cat song for a minute. And I was playing that constantly, and everybody was just like, dude, knock it off.
Speaking of like what's popular right now, the Beyonce album, Cowboy Carter.
Dude, big fan of that. That's probably my newest obsession is a track on there in particular called Yeah Yeah.
That is a great track.
I was talking to my friend about it, and he's like, the intro could be about a minute less. You know, could be kind of tough, but it's once it kicks in, it's great. I was listening to that the other day. I'm in New York right now, so I'm doing a lot of, you know, city walking. And I had my headphones on, my noise canceling, my dangerous headphones for city walking.
Sure.
And I was just blasting that song, and I was grooving pretty hard. I was grooving pretty hard. Those drums are obscene.
That's a great, yeah.
So that's such a good beat.
Great song. Okay. So should we turn it over to Shy Kids?
Yeah, let's listen to Shy Kids. I can't wait to listen back to this one. These guys were really good guests. They were very inspiring, and they're doing so much cool stuff. I mean, they have this, you'll hear all about it, but they're musicians. They're they make films, they animate stuff. They do everything. They're just really cool. And they have
one really cool thing is they let us preview a new song on an album that is coming out soon.
Yes, so they
stay tuned for that.
In their words, in a word that I also use frequently, it's a bit of a sclusy, a little bit of a sclusy here. Got a sclusy track that's not on Wavelake yet. So if you'll still be able to zap it though. So make sure you zap these tracks, zap, boost, do whatever floats your boat. Just get him some cheese. You know what I'm saying? All right, let's go, Shy Kids. Hi, Shy Kids.
Hey.
Hey.
It's really great to see you guys and be able to talk today. Thanks for joining us.
Of course.
Where are you all based? Just for my own understanding.
We're up in Toronto, Canada.
Fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good time.
And so just to be clear who we're talking to, Matt and Patrick from Shy Kids. You guys have uploaded a lot of great music to Wavelake. So from what I understand, you're a band, but you do a lot of other creative things. Can you give us just like an overview of, I don't know, the kinds of work that you're involved with and
how did this get started? It just sounds like such a cool concept to begin with.
Yeah, we were basically all in university for film, radio, and television, some combination of the three, and we met as musicians who wanted to play music outside of the classroom stuff. So we started from a base of, you know, kind of trying to tackle a whole bunch of stuff at once, and we made music through university, and Matt and I found kind of common ground working in animation and motion graphics. Kind of helped us pay for school, doing some work for Toronto companies during our time at university. Folded that into a company that eventually became a production company, and for the last 10-11 years we've been running an independent production company in Toronto, as well as making music in the evening still.
Wow. That's super
cool. That's really cool.
So you just met at the university. Were you playing in bands prior to that, or was this like the first official band for you all, or what's your
first official band for me?
First official band for you?
I think Pat.
Yeah, I'd done I had played in like metal bands in high school and stuff.
That's what I was hoping for. I was hoping there was some kind of embarrassing band situation.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some terrible videos deep on YouTube of those Battle of the Bands at Woodlands High School in Mississauga.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
I had kind of taken a break from music going into university and wanted to focus fully on film, and very quickly realized that I missed it in my evening life.
Yeah.
And so when basically there's a third member, Walter, who's not here. Him and I were in film together, and one of the first couple weeks of university, there was this talent show going on in our residence in the lobby. And we had never met, but we'd heard of each other through the film program. And he came up and he said, "I heard you play guitar. Do you want to just like try to get our name on this list and see if we can play something?" And I was like, "Sure." He goes, "What do you know?" I'm like, "Well, I was just working on this like acoustic version of Baby Got Back, originally covered by Jonathan Coulton, the arrangement." And he was like, "I know all the words, perfect, let's do it." We snuck up, we got on the list, and we won the talent show, which was just the start of a fruitful relationship, and we were like, we should keep going. And he introduced me to Matt, and then the three of us started writing songs together.
Yeah, that's so great. I knew Walter because we lived on the same floor in residence. And through Walter, I met Pat.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
And this blossomed into a long and
when
productive
relationship.
When I met Pat,
he had like three albums done. He's like,
very prolific.
It was a lot of bedroom stuff.
At that time, I think it was like grade 12, like the end of high school. That was like when I got like a decent copy of GarageBand. So I was like just kind of getting started in like recording and mixing and that whole world of things. And then Pat had like finished products of things, and I was like, wow, you're like ahead of me on that.
Didn't take you long to overtake me.
That's always That was sort of my onboarding to bands as well. I just found somebody that had a four track recorder and I was so impressed. It, like listening back to it, it's like the biggest piece of garbage you've ever heard in your life. But I was just like, these guys know what's going on. Like these guys are professionals. I need to hitch my horse to this wagon because they're going places.
Should we play a song from the Shy Kids to get people acquainted if they're not already?
Yeah, so we picked out a couple songs. One of them is going to be new, which is very exciting. But maybe we should play the other track right now. It's called House Cats. That's the one you picked. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we put out a record last year called House Cats. It was our third LP. And it's kind of combined of all these little ideas that never really made it anywhere. It was we have a demos folder of 100 songs, and over the pandemic we were kind of filtering through them, being like, we just gotta shed this skin and get this stuff out of our heads, because we always would come back to them and be like, well, what about this one, this could fit. We're like, let's just bang a bunch out. And House Cats, the title track, actually was something that was written specifically for the new album, House Cats. Yeah,
awesome. Let's play it, and anyone listening along, remember you can zap this song if you're listening to it on Fountain or another 2.0 enabled player. Let's check it out. Here's House Cats.
I wake up, say what's up, get a touch, scratch a rug, get your shrug, where's the love? You act like I chose to be here. Hear you bicker, watch life flicker. I never chose to be here. Just to be clear, if I could, then I would. Or maybe we could go outside. I'd love to feel the rays of the summer. Can we go outside? When I'm stuck at home alone, it's a bummer. If we go outside, all the plans out there have no pause. Did you sneeze, allergies? Is it me? When will we ever stop? And just play. And just play all day. And just waste away. Together in our space.
Killer track.
Thanks. Yeah.
It's a great song. It captures lockdown in a few of those lyrics pretty nicely.
Yeah, I think early iterations of that song, it was written by Walter. He has a cat, a beautiful cat named Mooney. Early iterations of that idea had been floating around about writing a song from the perspective of the cat, kind of when its entire world is the house. And what does it think is going on outside those doors? And then, you know, everything happened, and it became kind of, it had got a second meaning to it that was exciting.
Yeah. And so when you talked about having a bunch of songs that were just kind of sitting in a box for a while, Was that version we just heard, like, how did you construct the version that we just heard? Was it built off of a demo, or is that kind of how it started and you just fleshed it out?
Yeah, that one was an instrumental I'd put together when we spent some time in Australia in 2019, just kind of sick, homesick and working on stuff on a laptop. And I had sent it to the guys, and I think Walter had come up with initial melodies for it right off the back of that, but it did just kind of, I don't know, we got busy, work happened, and then that song just kind of sat to the side. And then when we were going through and trying to pick stuff to put on this new record, we dug that up, we listened to it, Walter sang the lyrics to me in the room, and I was like, oh, that's perfect. Like, let's sit down, like, let's properly record it, we'll tweak the production, get it all kind of up to snuff, and then, yeah.
Nice. And as far as, like, your production process goes, I'm just curious, like, you guys seem to be sort of multifaceted in terms of, like, visual arts, audio, all that. In terms of recording music like this, do you guys have a studio you work out of? Is it kind of like patching together a bunch of, you know, sources of audio, like, here and there? What's your process for production?
Yeah, it's kind of, I wouldn't say there's like a linear way or like a super consistent way it always comes together. It's usually like a combination. So like sometimes we'll have little voice notes of melodies, or we'll have like a riff on a piano or a riff on a guitar, or I'm like making stuff all the time. So like I'll send these guys like 5-minute instrumental, and it's like maybe they pick up on something, maybe they don't, like in terms of adding lyrics or melodies. Sometimes we'll get together in a room and write it all together in, you know, an hour, but it doesn't happen that often. It's more so like one of us presents like the seed of an idea, and then we'll kind of correlate around it and eventually get something out of it.
Yeah,
that's
I think
like
that
songwriting process. Yeah,
and I think that process kind of stems from the fact that we are constantly doing a bunch of stuff. Like, I think the dream world is, yeah, you get together every evening over beers and play music in a room and write songs and dream something up. But I think because we're always working on our own projects or so many different projects within Shy Kids, it is kind of like any minute you can get to sit down and workshop something on your own and then bring it to the other guys. It's like that just so happens to be the way that a lot of our stuff has found the most success. It's just like kind of cultivating it on our own and getting it to a point where we feel like we're satisfied with it, or at least satisfied to show, and then see how everybody else can add to it in the next stage of production.
Plus, it's just so cool having the other media elements of this, because you can never have enough songs or ideas, I'm sure, because you're just constantly working on so many projects. Like, even if something doesn't create a spark in a certain moment, it could just come back to life at any point in time if you're working on an animation project or something. That's
absolutely,
that's really cool. Plus, it's just cool that you're all songwriters, yeah, and able to work so well together in that capacity.
Yeah, I think we're all very lucky to have the team that we've got. Everybody's got their strengths, but everybody's strong. It's great.
I'm curious about the, like, what's the cohesive musical influence that ties you together? Like, what are some of the strongest influences that really connect you all? I mean, listening to your music, I wouldn't necessarily expect, you know, you were a previous metalhead or something, or maybe still are. But I know that's actually really common. Like, that's what's so cool about music, is people find inspiration in all kinds of different things. So I'm just curious what you guys connect on.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do feel like there is, like, it's three very different directions in a lot of ways. Like, if I'm going to idly put something on while I'm working, it's probably going to be, like, Nine Inch Nails.
Okay.
like that to me is, like, what immediately gets my blood and brain going.
What's your favorite Nine Inch Nails record to put on?
I mean, I don't think it's objectively a great record front to back, but The Fragile holds a special place in my heart.
Actually, yeah.
That's the double one, right?
Yeah, the double one. It's maybe one of the strongest opening tracks of all time. I find Somewhat Damaged to just be like maybe the top tier Nine Inch Nails, but it's a fat record. It's got a lot of stuff in it. But I mean, for me, it was just like when it hit me in high school, it was very important, and like it felt like, I don't know, I felt connected to it in a way. So it's very easy to kind of fall back on that and listen to it. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think either of the other guys has any time.
Like, I've never listened to Nine Inch Nails. I have no interest.
What do you go to, Matt, when you're looking for inspiration?
I listen to like a lot of ambient music, like Brian Eno.
When you mentioned 5-minute instrumentals, the first thought that popped into my mind, I think you guys have a track called The Wind.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that track. It's a beautiful track. I don't know. Am I accurate in guessing that might have been from you or inspired?
Yeah,
by
that
you?
Was from me. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I also like all sorts of things though. Like, I like bossa nova-y, like Latin music. A lot of that, like classical music, I like. A lot of like low key, like kind of more like lo-fi electronic music, like Bonobo and Fortet. That world is probably like my go-to if I'm gonna sit down and work and get something done and throw on like John Hopkins or something like that. Yeah, but then like also I'll listen to like a pop song. I like. And it's the same with Pat. I think it's the same with all of us. Like, maybe we have like kind of our little niche that we'll go to, but in general we're like very, I think we just like good music, like whatever, like,
yeah, I think
really
pop,
catchy
just like
songs, good songs. Yeah,
pop songs tend to just be where the Venn diagram of all three of us meet in the middle, which I think is why a lot of our music feels kind of poppy with some other influences bleeding in.
Yeah, because I mean, sorry, go ahead, Michael.
I was just gonna say, and I think you mean pop song in the very broad sense of like popular music, a song with
like
the verse, chorus,
2.5-3 minute with a great hook. Yeah,
yeah. You just
in
have,
the
such,
early
you have such
days,
a strong
though.
Sense of melody, so that and that comes across in all that type of music. I mean, everything you just named, even though it's quite diverse, they're all diverse from each other. They still have that commonality of incredible melodies, especially The Fragile. I mean, that album in particular is. It's like an art piece more than it is an album.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, in the early days, we really connected on like Animal Collective would probably be the biggest one. Was like,
yeah, I think our,
I can hear
stuff, our early stuff, especially, I mean, if you came to one of our shows in the early 2010s, it was like, we're at a lot of points just looked like an Animal Collective cover band. I feel like,
well, you got to start somewhere. Yeah. How is the live show? Do you guys play out a lot? Do you tour?
We haven't played live since 2018.
Oh wow!
We moved to Australia to work on a show for the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, called Content, and we were there for 6 months. So it was kind of forced us to take a little bit of a break from playing live. And I think immediately after that, we were also sort of burnt out on. I mean, a lot of the shows we were playing were like showcase shows in the city, so. You know, you'd be one of five bands up on stage and like everybody would show up for their friend's band and then leave. And then, so you're playing to the same 20 people that were nice enough to come to the last show. And they're usually friends and family. And we were so obsessive about the way we presented ourselves. We would bring screens on stage for these like 40-minute sets. It was like, it was such a headache. And there was so much money put into rehearsing and like so much effort put into technical preparation that we were like, is it worth it at this point? Maybe we should just find time in the future to set up and invest in putting on our own event where we can kind of control everything, feature some artists that we like, and then know that it's like a once in a blue moon kind of thing. So people shouldn't feel obliged to come and check us out every single time we play. And it just hasn't happened yet. But I feel like we're all kind of itching for it, especially as we're working on new music. We're thinking very actively about how to play live again.
So speaking of the new music, we mentioned we have a new track. We can play that here in a minute, but I'm very excited for more music. How long have you been working on this? Is it a full album? What's the deal with the new music?
Yeah, it would be. This is, I think, this is the first time we've kind of talked about it in public. So it's an album. It's very much actually kind of. It coincided with getting super into Bitcoin, going down the rabbit hole. So it's, I feel like the energy of Bitcoin is in this album, at least maybe not like literally talking about it, but like the state I was in and where I was at and in my life was like, I think it kind of like entered into this, the songs. But basically in 2021 or 20, I guess it would have been the end of 2020, mm-hmm. Pat?
Yep.
When it was like getting real crazy up here in Canada with with the restrictions and all the lockdowns, I was basically like, I gotta get out of here. It was just having too much of an effect on me. So I went down to Costa Rica for what ended up being like 7 or 8 months, and like during that time I just had like a lot of interesting experiences, and I felt like with Bitcoin makes you question the whole everything, right? It takes you down. It's takes you down the rabbit hole of like the nature of why our society is kind of broken in so many ways. And I was kind of like having all those realizations, and also just having a big shift in perspective. I don't know, I could get into it a lot, but like I was doing a lot of meditation at the time and just was having all these things blow up in what I thought the world was, basically. And so the album is sort of tracking that process, I would say. Like it's the songs might not literally say like, oh, this happened and that happened and that happened, but the things I'm talking about in the album kind of correlate to those ideas or correlate to that experience. And I like, there's also relationship songs because I met some people down there and had a romantic relationship. So that weaved its way into the album as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think you were down so. There on your journey, and then when he came back, he sort of had this idea. Oh, yeah. And a bunch of stuff that we heard, and we're like, you need to pursue getting this all the way through, and let us know where we can come in and help. And he did, and we did, and helped kind of shape this thing into something. I love it. It feels very much like it's a very cool marriage to me. And Matt, I don't know if I'm just speaking for myself here, but it feels like the music itself and the songs are this really cool marriage of spirituality and technology that you hear immediately when you listen to the music, but then you start to connect it back to what you were going through, Matt, and in terms of going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. And I feel like it all kind of speaks to each other. Like it definitely all reflects what you were going through. It's really good stuff. I think it's the best stuff we've ever done.
That's incredible. So let's hear this song, and then we can, I'd love after this as well to dig in a little bit more, maybe just to the like industry and Bitcoin stuff and how that affects sure. you as artists. But let's check out this song. What's the name of this one?
This one's called Signal.
Down at a mile.
Dang.
That's a fantastic track.
So good.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, it's yeah, the metalhead in me, that song hits at some points that I'm like, Matt, I didn't know you had it in you.
Yeah, that's like the most heavy song I've made for sure. Like,
those drums. Are
you the
so
drummer,
great.
Matt? Yeah, I was going to say the drumming is fantastic.
No, the drum, it's a sample.
It just sounds, oh, it really is. Okay. Cool. It sounds, yeah, fantastic. And then who's the vocalist?
So the vocalist is this artist from Toronto named Olive B. And I met her through a friend. And I had like these lyrics for this song. And I think maybe we tried recording them with Pat. And I tried recording them. But it just wasn't really, didn't feel right. So somehow got the idea to ask her to work on the song and sing it. And just like immediately like clicked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a few instances of that on this new record. I think we're really kind of expanding the scope a bit. There's a couple songs with guest vocalists on it that really help bring them to life in different ways. It was exciting to kind of take a step back from being on mic.
That's cool. Yeah. I was going to ask how frequently, cause I mean, this feels like a collective of sorts in some way. I mean, I know the core of it is the three of you, but I just, it's such a unique thing. I just semi-recently saw the Elephant Six documentary. Have you seen that or familiar with that at all? You know, bands like Neutral Milk Hotel and Apples and Stereo, yeah, and yeah, stuff back, you know, in the 90s, they had this really cool thing where it was kind of an art collective. Everyone was just, they're making music and there were bands and they were also creating really cool videos and art pieces and just fun stuff. And this seems like, in a lot of ways, it's like the closest thing I can nail it to if I'm trying to, of like, what's a modern day version of that? It's really awesome. But so it's cool to just be able to bring people in and out. I mean, I know that's not like super, super unique, but it's in this particular instance, I think it's really cool because it all still sounds like, as diverse as you are and as just being all songwriters and just all the elements of this, it's so cohesive. That's probably the most impressive part about this is it feels like a band the first time, and I know it is, but just, I know these things, it's really cool when you, Michael, the first time Michael, we were talking about you guys, we were like, he's like, I think they're like a, I don't even know if they're a band, they're like a production company or something. I was like, what? I went and looked into it, and it made sense when you watched there's a video on your website, which is really cool and explaining all that. And so it makes sense, but it is just so awesome to see this.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, we got talked into making that video by enough people who were like, you are doing a terrible job at explaining what you are. You need just like a calling card, because we would run into that for years when we were trying to, like, you know, you want to talk to a label and then you have to explain that you're working on a film so you can't work on the next thing, or you're talking to a production company about putting a film together and you're like, but we have to take a break. We got shows we want to play. And they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Pick a lane, guys. Yeah. And I think that it is really flattering to hear that it feels cohesive, because we have discussions internally all the time when we put our songs back to back and we go, this sounds like schizophrenia. This sounds like, because like, we have so many ideas of where they all came from and so many connections to the root of it. So to hear that it comes out sounding cohesive is a relief.
Yeah, I think that song, I mean, I'm excited to hear the rest of this album now after hearing that track. But I think I've heard enough of your songs, and even though there's another vocalist on this particular track that we just played, I can hear it's a Shy Kid song in the melody and the construction. So I mean that in the most complimentary way. Speaking of like labels and this album coming out, and obviously, like, you know, we work at Wavelake, we're trying to like help artists, you know, put music out, earn Bitcoin, and just be able to create a fair system for all this. Do you guys have like a plan for how you're going to roll this new album out, and how does technology and Bitcoin and all of that maybe tie into your plans?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had an interesting history with labels and representation. And yeah, I think Matt could probably speak to the plans with this one, but I think in general we're hoping to embrace all the benefits of opening up the gates wide and free.
Yeah, in short, like we're not going with a label. We're not going with, like, we're gonna do it all ourselves. I mean, in terms of just like the distribution and that stuff, like happy to work with people and to help get it out. But I think we're still sort of like thinking about how we're going to roll it out like entirely, but we know that I want Bitcoin to be a part of it. and we're trying to think of cool ways to use it, actually, to integrate it into the release. Obviously, Wavelake is at the center of that. And I think we just really want to embrace the ethos of like using these new technologies and platforms to do something a little different.
Also to amplify the signal.
There you go.
I mean, yeah. What are there particular qualities or like features in, you know, Lightning payments, for example, or in, you know, open distribution? Like, what is it about these technologies that intrigues you or attracts you and makes you want to experiment with distribution in this manner?
Well, there's no one in between you and the fans, so that creates a whole constellation of new possibilities. I keep playing around with this idea, like almost at the beginning, maybe like giving people Satoshis as they listen to music. Like, instead of putting $10,000 into like a marketing budget of Facebook ads, like put like a mechanism where as you listen to it, you get some Satoshis or something like that. I don't know how that would work at all, but like just a way to flip things around entirely. And like,
yeah, we've seen the money go to the Facebook ads campaigns and how quickly that just gets gobbled up for
and just evaporate.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, great, the view count rises, and then they turn the tap off and it just freezes for 2 years and doesn't go any higher. And it's like, this is all completely constructed, and it's such a closed, siloed system. And I think that, like, what you guys are doing in terms of just having it exist in one place, like, we've done distribution independently through DistroKid and stuff, but also through the label where it's all obfuscated. And also, if I have to send another message about whitelisting our own YouTube video...
That's got to be so like, annoying. Yeah,
for it's all the just like, well, especially because it's like, yeah, we want to use a song in an ad that we direct, and it's like we have to now facilitate this big conversation between people where it's like, it's our stuff.
Yeah.
it's,
yeah.
So I think like as much as we can get away from this sort of like siloed, spaces where there's like all these gatekeepers and all this control by other people, that'll be for the better.
That's interesting that you brought up sort of the, giving Satoshis to fans. We've thought about so many different ways of doing that or incentivizing fans and like bringing back this, like the street team model. You know, like when I was a kid and I was a street team for labels, they would send me CDs with like a hole punch in it and some posters and stickers and stuff. And I'd keep a couple and then I'd like go hang up the rest of them at my record stores and stuff. And that was my incentive. I just like got free stuff. Sometimes they let you in free shows. And it's like, that idea really worked for a long time. You know, that
what's the street method? Sorry.
Just like street, like punk labels when I was a kid, like, you know, Fat Records and Epitaph and those types of labels and Kung Fu and I don't know, you know, those things like mid-90s pop punk record labels. Just would sign up for a street team and they would send you like a giant envelope just full of crap. You know, it'd be like, here's five CDs. The CDs were all broken because they were just like thrown loosely into this big envelope. But it'd be like CDs and stickers and posters. And the idea was just like, go hang these around, you know, like go hang them around your school, around. And that was the incentive, is you just kind of just get free stuff for helping to promote the bands. And this was like early days of the internet. I'm assuming I'm quite a bit older than you guys. So it was like early days of the internet. And, you know, that was just how you had to do it. It was like just pure DIY, like street marketing, guerrilla marketing type stuff. And we know how strong that connection is directly with the fan and how the fan supported model is, if it can be harnessed, is an incredible model. Like especially during COVID and stuff, you saw that happen with live streams and stuff, and that sort of fell off the map. But you saw like when artists really needed support, even in like a dire time, fans were right there to support those artists to make sure that they were able to continue making music and survive, because that's what you want. And you were bringing people joy in that time, you know? So, it's just crazy to like knowing how important that connection is. We really want to create some options for those types of things, but I'm curious. So Matt, it seems like, it seems like you're all kind of on board with this idea, but are you the one who sort of brought this concept up to everyone? I mean, how was that conversation? Was this something that was sort of realized simultaneously somehow, magically, or like how did this come to be as far as like just getting on board? Because we see it's difficult. You'll find like the Bitcoin guy in the band, but then convincing the other few people can be tough, you know, because it comes with some bad vibes sometimes, like depending on who you're talking to.
Totally does. Yeah, I mean, like, I started getting into Bitcoin, like, 2017 or something like that, that run. And then really got into it, like, 2019, 2020. And at that time, in 2020, we had a little bit of, like, capital to do something with. And I was like, somehow convince these guys. Like,
I honestly don't know how you did it.
I don't know how I did it either.
I'm happy you did, but I think back and I don't know where my head was at.
For some reason, they just trusted me, and I was like, guys, let's take some of our corporate treasury and put it into Bitcoin. And that kind of, kicked off getting these guys involved, getting Walter and Pat.
When the money is going, it kind of forces you to really do some reading and not just, And I mean, we had been aware, like I was on the internet in 2012. I remember seeing people buying pizzas with it and being like, I should get some of that. And then feeling like an absolute idiot later. But, that was kind of where it started. And then since then, Matt's been the guy who's always in the know and keeps us up to date. But philosophically, we all completely align on it. The culture around it, that's something that comes and goes, but like I think the tenets of what it stands for is like, it's undeniable for us.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest part, and it's why it's so great to have people like you out there that are interested in this, because it's going to take these types of things to usher in people and realize how it can exist in a subculture or counterculture in music and art and things like that, instead of just, you know, for people getting gains on their day trade or whatever. Because what a lot of people think, that's the utility. When you just do a little bit of reading, you find out it's clearly it's not. So that's really awesome. That's super cool. Happy
to. I knew, and I was like waiting for Wave Lake. I was like, how is there not something like how is there not something like Spotify or whatever, like just where I can listen to music and pay people Bitcoin? Like, it seemed like such an obvious thing, like that it was wild that it didn't exist to me. But I guess that's more and more what I find, like going into the Bitcoin community, where it's like, it's the Bitcoin community. And it's like not in conversation necessarily with like musicians or these things. So it's like they don't even know, oh, I should build that tool. I should build a music streaming, whatever. So when I saw you guys on Wavelake, I was like, oh, there it is. Like, perfect. Let's put our stuff up there for sure. And it's been cool. Like, I think we've made more money on I Love Everything than Spotify.
I got a little something to do with that. That's my favorite song right now on there. So good.
I mean, that's great to hear, though, because that's exactly what you described is what we're just trying to attract people who are familiar with Bitcoin, people who aren't, and we ultimately just see it philosophically as a really powerful tool to enable things like this and to create ultimately just a better system for musicians to be able to do their thing that they do best and that they want to do. I'm curious, like we have this conversation a lot in terms of talking to musicians who don't know anything about Bitcoin or might have a negative bias against it, just based on superficial things they see on the news and some of the emotions surrounding it. I guess Patrick, since you were the one being convinced, like what was it that I'm just curious, like what Matt said to you or how he said it that sort of made you look at it openly and consider it.
I mean, I think first and foremost is because he's like a brother and I trust him, and I was definitely just like very open to hearing. And I think, though I can't remember the specifics, I believe what it came down to was like, he was like, forget the headlines, forget the stuff that you're seeing on the surface. He's like, let's just like talk about what is going on the planet, how money is tied to that, and like let's think how we could solve a lot if we deal with that problem that is kind of at the root of most of the strife that we see, which helped shape it as like a very large thing to me. And then I think just through many, many sober and drunken conversations where he would get up to a blackboard and do diagrams and explain the system to me, and I would forget it the next day, but then we would have another talk over coffee where I'd have questions and he'd answer them. It just, over time, I was just like, it really seems like a silly thing to not be for this larger decentralization.
Yeah, but it was a process. It wasn't like
conversation. For sure, no, and I definitely probably annoyed the hell out of him by coming back with all sorts of naive, but... and then he'd be
what
like,
about?
No, no, no.
Yeah.
That's where you're wrong, Pat. The Bitcoiners love talking about Bitcoin. There's no...
but
like, I am always so excited to answer your uneducated question.
It does take a degree of patience, though. I mean, like, it sounds like you had a lot of patience, Matt, in sort of answering questions and
he does and continues to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause we're all still learning. This is so, we were in our the Wavelake Telegram chat yesterday talking with like another developer was in there chiming in on stuff. And it's just like, we're all just admitting how small this is and how early everything is. And we're just trying stuff. And these, what might be right now may not be right 6 months from now, because everything is just moving so quickly, and it just takes people having conversations to figure out what's the right next move. I mean, I'm looking forward to talking to you all more in the future just to get ideas and stuff, and especially around this new release, like how we can support you. That's our most important thing right now, is just figuring out. There's the path is so wide open. It's like, what do we take next? What do we do next that's gonna pave the way a little bit further for the next band that comes on? Or what artist is going to stand out and do something really cool that's going to inspire a handful of other artists, you know, even if it's just another couple, to come on board and just try this out and see? Because yeah, it's just like, these are just little building blocks in the grand scheme of things, and the reality of this situation is it is so small, you know. But I do think it's something that has the ability to really, really start to move quickly, you know, if the right person comes along and really proves that to a more mainstream audience.
Absolutely.
I think that's the right attitude, because it's like, it's sort of like the early days of the internet where people were just trying a bunch of stuff out and seeing what worked. So it seems like we right now have the opportunity to do that and just play with it and have fun and
try to disrupt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the most exciting thing about this, you know, is that it's unwritten. The future is unwritten, and it could go in any number of directions. And I think we all want to see where that takes us, and in some small way contribute something to a better world. I have to ask, because I saw the video that was making the rounds on socials that had a Shy Kids song on it. And I believe it was an AI-generated video. This is obviously a very hot button issue these days. So
hear that. Twitter is very loud.
Yeah, it can be. First of all, I wasn't clear. Did you guys produce that, or did you, you know, prompt it and generate it? And then
us as well as Walter's partner Sydney, who's the producer on it, like Shy Kids as a group produced it using Sora. We are part of their artist test group. We've been working with OpenAI in some capacity for the last 3 years. We did an installation at TIFF 2021, I believe, for a film called Dolly Land. And then OpenAI used Dolly, their image generation platform, at that installation. It was kind of when it was being introduced into the world. Sydney showed OpenAI our stuff, because as filmmakers, we had always kind of tackled technology as sort of a spine through the stories we were telling. And they liked it and invited us to be part of their test group. And since then, we've been helping inform the researchers on stuff like their language models, like GPT. And then when Sora was announced, they tapped us on the shoulder and said, hey, would you guys like to play around with it for the sake of helping our researchers, you know, figure out how artists are going to use it? In a lot of the ways, like similar to what Matt's saying about, you know, the Bitcoin community aren't thinking necessarily like musicians. It's like these researchers aren't thinking like filmmakers, even though they're making text to video. So they want to engage with artists and figure out how they're actually going to play with it. And so that, the film is called Airhead. It was about a minute and a half long. It's got one of our songs in it. I do the voiceover. And that was sort of our just experiment internally to be like, you give us a tool, we're storytellers. Our instinct is like, okay, well, let's just try to tell a story. It's the same way John Lennon, if you give me a tuba, I'll try to write a song with it. So we were like, let's just try to put something together. We'll try to do something that is like, there's a problem with generative AI where consistency and control is difficult. So how do we get around that? We make a guy with a balloon for a head instead of a face. Consistency problem more or less solved. We can do a little montage, some writing in there, and then sent it to their team. The researchers loved it. And then they asked if they wanted to put it out, or if they asked if they could put it out. We were like, yeah, of course. And then, yeah, it did kind of blow up a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting that I was not aware that you've been involved in the research as well as experimenting with the tools themselves. There's a lot of noise about what AI means for the creative arts. Would love to know your guys' take.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a question we've been answering a bunch lately. It's still like the paradigm is shifting. There's going to be a massive shift that is undeniable. And any fear about it uprooting and severely changing the job market, I think, is a founded fear. But I also, my personal position, having used the tool, is it did not make me want to work with humans less. I think that humans are at the center of all good art. as a post-production guy, it's a cool tool to insert into my process. But I feel like anybody who truly believes the culture is willing to go with all AI everything, I think undervalues artists and undervalues the culture. Like, I think that I have too much respect for people to think that they'd stand for not having human hands on stuff. So I think that there's a lot of hype. It's a very big deal right now, but I do think that it'll settle in as a tool that will enter people's processes. But good art will always be made by people.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. In fact, I feel my stance on it is that if anything, I think it'll bring focus back to human art even more. I think we'll see a resurgence in manual analog art, similar in the way that the vinyl industry is skyrocketing in a world of digital music. It's people want the tangible thing. They want to feel things. Like, at the end of the day, as long as humans are around, we're all still humans and we want to connect with something. And it is really cool to see AI stuff, and I think it will be used as a tool. But it is 100% true. You lose the connection when it's something that's just straight generated. But when you're telling a story and you're sort of augmenting this with human emotion, you're able to make that connection. It's really cool. My daughter actually sent it to me, which I thought was really fun. She was just like, this is really cool. I think you would like it. And I was like, hey, I know those guys.
That's awesome. No, I think like that, since it's the AI conversation has been going on for a while, and I've always been like, art is a process, not a product. And I think, you know, if you want to sit down and cynically slap your keyboard to skip all the process and get to the end product, I think that will show in the quality of the thing that comes out. If you want to incorporate the technology in an authentic way into your creative process and truly treat it like a tool, I think that will be obvious and represented in what you see at the end. I don't care how you got there. If a song takes 10 minutes to write and it's a great song, I don't care that it took 10 minutes to write if it came out of you honestly.
I remember these arguments in, like, when I was coming up in bands, and the first time I started recording music, if you recorded with Pro Tools, you were like the devil. Like, that was the worst thing you could do. It's like, why are you not, like, how could you not record to tape? Like, Pro Tools, it sounds like, it sounds like garbage. It's fake. You know, everything can just be spliced together and cut together. It takes the emotional element out of it. And it was very similar to this. Like, it kind of did inside. Like, if you overused it, it did. But then people found ways to use it as a tool. People found ways to overuse it, which is fine, and it created entirely new, like, a lot of those things created entirely new genres. I mean, look at, like, the auto-tune or something, how that as a tool became an instrument in itself, you know? Yep. So I think it's just, people are afraid of new technology, just, it's, you know, but ultimately
till the
it's
end,
like,
of time.
Yeah, it's like, this is just going to keep happening over and over and over again. It's so funny when people get, I can't even tell you how many Instagram comments I've read when some band does an AI video and everyone's just like, you know, burning them at the stake. And it's like, dude, chill. Like, these guys are just trying stuff out. You know, it's just crazy how fast people will turn on you for using a computer. It's so funny.
Yeah. It's definitely felt that very specifically. Yeah. Because we, on the House Cats record, we did a lot of, like, I was playing with Stable Diffusion and stuff to make a lot of those AI videos, just because I'm a dork and, like, I'm like a tech guy. Like, I love just, like, the novelty of playing around in it and seeing what could come. But yeah, there was a lot of response of, like, I thought you were artists. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's, ouch. Yeah, and that's hilarious.
It's silly. It's
like, you are so clearly artists and prolific and talented. And so it's like, to completely discount that just because you use a tool is almost, you know, I don't know. I would take offense to it personally.
Yeah. the thing that I don't really know how to reckon with, though, is that, you know, once a lot of these things start going public, and a lot of them have, like, you see it with some of the AI music tools right now, I feel like we're going to be faced with a deluge of crap, a tidal wave of just noise. And I don't know how we're going to reckon with that. I feel like at my most optimistic, I'm like, it'll break the systems that are trying to handle it. You know, streaming services are going to get overloaded with people just submitting millions of hours of generated stuff. And then it's going to force them to reevaluate. Maybe it breaks the system. And that's, to me, probably a good thing. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's going to shift our entire online diet. It's just like this massive tidal wave of crap that's about to...
it's going to have to peak to pull people back to that curated experience.
I think it's highly likely that a mass market develops for AI-generated media, just in general. I could see a future where mainstream radio You know, over the air TV, a lot of that is just AI generated, you know, auto generated stuff that people can easily digest and right. kind of the expectations are low and it sort of caters to just, you know, yeah, a common
palate.
It's pretty
much there.
Yeah,
it's
I mean,
much
like
there
most
already.
Right, most. I mean, this is why. Yeah, exactly. Most radio and TV is already like that today. Very formulaic, very, you know, predictable. And so I think it's totally reasonable to expect that in the future, just automatically generated by a computer. But I think there will always be demand for alternatives to that,
mm-hmm.
which is why I'm still hopeful.
Big time. Yeah, I think we're all optimists. In the face of it, or try to be. I mean, I feel like it's going to be a tool that we add to our repertoire, and we don't plan on changing our entire process around it, and we definitely don't plan on working with less people, because that's the best part of all of it.
I also think, like, this is a more esoteric point, but I think humans, we actually pick up on a lot more things than are immediately obvious to us. So, like, when you listen to a song, yeah, you're listening to the melody, your eardrums are vibrating and the brain is translating those into an auditory experience for you. But you're also, like, picking up on the state of that person when they recorded it. You know what I mean? Like, in my voice, when I talk, there's... my entire personality is coming through my tone of voice, if you know what I mean. Like, deeper aspects of me are revealed in the way I talk, in my body language, like subtle ways. And like, when you listen to a song, you're picking up on those things. And I think the success of a song has a lot to do with those subtle things. And so, like, an AI generated song, I don't think it doesn't have like an intention when it's making the song. It doesn't have that same subtle energy. It just is spitting out kind of an algorithmic thing, right? I don't know, I kind of think humans can pick up on that, and that's a reason why there will always have to be a human element behind things. Could be wrong, could be proven wrong, but
yeah. Well, no, I agree with you. I think humans have a sixth sense for when something is happening spontaneously, and
right, yeah,
that can be like a guitar solo at a concert or even on a record. I feel like you can kind of tell when the thing was not totally planned out. I think in comedy too, you can tell when like an improv troupe is making something up on the spot versus going off a script, and in conversation when things are just happening, you know, off the cuff. I totally think there's, you know, people are always going to, that's always going to resonate with people, that spontaneity, that element of something sort of appearing out of the ether.
Mm-hmm.
I
think about all the times I track vocals and the take's not working, and then Matt or Walter goes, smile. And then immediately it just sounds so much better. Yeah. It doesn't sound like different to the ear, but for some reason that just makes it work. I think it's my Trent Reznor inside of me. I just want to be in pain.
The downward spiral.
I don't know if you guys saw that tool, Suno AI.
Oh, the music generator?
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard a little bit about it.
We typed in some stuff and it's like, it's a listenable, like, it's definitely listenable. It sounds good in quotes, but it's like, I'm not continuing to listen to it. I listened to it once and that was it. Like, I disposed of it after that. So it's, I don't know. There's something there, I think. I'm more excited, like, can I use the AI to make a sample? Like, hey, make me a cool drum sample that combines Jay Dilla with Led Zeppelin or something, and like, just see what it does and sort of use it as like a yeah to create samples to work with.
I think it could just be cool for inspiration. You know, it's just like getting I've messed around with stuff a little bit, and it's like just coming up with a prompt. Just typically I end up just getting frustrated, but then I get an idea. If I was like trying to do something, then I'll just be like, oh, okay, you know, cause that's what I used to do. Like I'm a graphic designer as well. And sometimes I would just like Google stuff and I'd just be going through it. And then I'd be like, oh, this is inspiring. Now I have an idea. I didn't have an idea before. I was blank. And now I'm just looking at a wall of art. I'd have all these bookmarks of, you know, old public domain things that I would just scroll through, like old book pages and stuff. And then you just, it's like listening to music when you hear a song. Like, I don't know about you guys, I'm sure you do this. I'll watch a music documentary about any band. I don't care who it is. The second it's over, I like go grab my guitar and start playing, because you're drawn to everything. You're so inspired by everything that's happening. So I think even just as like an inspirational tool, it can be really cool.
I mean, that reminds me, over the weekend I was playing with Korg has a great iPad app where they have all these modular like synthesizers that you can plug in together and drum machines. But they've, you know, I mean, a lot of DAWs have this where they have like beat packs or loop packs, and you just like, you click one and it's got a beat or it's got some, you know, some kind of arpeggiator or something just running. And I just started playing around with that. And then modifying it. And then by the end of, you know, messing around with it for an hour, like, it had been completely mutated from the beat pack that I had started with. It was just a totally different, you know, beast. So I think, like, AI could be used in the exact same way you're describing, Matt, where it's a starter and it can be complementary to the thing that you're trying to build, or even just kick you off down a totally, you know, new tangent that you would have never found on your own. I mean, that can be powerful, I think. And we don't know where that could take us is the exciting thing. We have no idea these machines are going to suggest.
You're just making me think of like those AI Go, when they're doing Go or chess or
games.
Those games, like where the researchers said they came up with sort of patterns like that they had never seen before, or
like strategies,
new strategies, right? And maybe the AIs will, like, in the chaos of its neural whatever, will just like spit out like some novel chord progression or something that like humans just hadn't ever discovered, you know?
Yeah,
that's cool to think about. Yeah.
Awesome, guys. Well, I think we're coming up to the end here. Do you want to tell everybody where the best place is to find you? And if there's anything, you know, you want to get out to the world, you know, I think we have at least 5 people listening to this show now. So they'll help distribute it. But yeah, where can people find you? And let's send you off properly here.
On Wavelake at ShyKids. Also, our Instagram is ShyKids_. Christian Cooper, you have had it at Shy Kids since 2012, and you've never posted anything. We want that.
Come on, dude.
Come on, Cooper.
Let it go.
And our website, shy-kids.com, has got a kind of big, long CV of the stuff we've done, as well as a video kind of explaining who we are and what we're about, as convoluted as it is.
We're on Noster as well, at Shy Kids.
Great.
But yeah, thanks for having us, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Hey, this has been great. I feel like we could keep going, but we know you have some more stuff to make, so we'll
let's do it another time.
Yeah, let's talk again soon.
Sounds great.
Appreciate
thanks
it,
thanks a lot, guys. Thank
all
you.
All right.
You've been listening to Waveform, brought to you by Wavelake. Wavelake is a platform for artists to share their music beyond paywalls, and where fans can pay whatever they want using Bitcoin. Artists retain all the rights to their work and receive payments instantly via the Lightning Network. Find out more at wavelake.com. Waveform is produced by Sam Means and Michael Ree. Theme by Paul Birkin. I'm D++. Thanks for listening.